This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. Welcome to this Stockbox interview with Phil Thomas, the President, CEO and COO of AIS Resources, which is listed on the TSXV in Toronto. So very good to be speaking to you, Phil. How are you?
Thanks, Mark.
Yes, it's good to have you on Stockbox. It's the first time that we're speaking. I wonder if before we get into about the company, about AIS, could you give us a bit of an overview about yourself and your career history?
Yeah, sure, Mark. I've been involved in geology and exploration and production in the last sort of 20 years of my career. But I started off doing a four-year geology degree at the Australian National University, which is one of Australia's premier universities. Then I went in the deep end and worked with a range of computer companies doing mine optimization, synthetic seismograms, and drill hole work. And I've had the pleasure to work at Ranger Uranium, which is closing down next month, and some interesting parts of Olympic Dam, and of course in the synthetic seismograms used in the oil industry. Then I went into investment banking from 1980 to 2003, working for Macquarie Bank and Macintosh Securities and Actuaries Watson Wyatt, just to basically sharpen my mathematical skills from university days. Then I moved in 2003 into Admiralty Resources as CEO, and basically ran four projects there: a cobalt nickel project in Western Australia at a place called Pike Hill, a silver lead zinc project at a place called Borman, which was close to the then CRA MacArthur River project, and then we worked on and developed an iron ore project in Chile, and that started production in 2007-08. And just to make sure I didn't have any spare time, I started a lithium project in the Rincon, and we were one of the first, apart from FMC, to get a lithium project up and running. So we had four projects running simultaneously, and obviously looking for other opportunities on the way through, and those last two were very successful. And after 6 years, I thought it was time for someone else to take the reins. So I moved on and did quite a number of lithium, iron ore, gold projects in Mexico and Argentina from 2009 to 2014. And then I became CEO of Arrowstar Resources, and we worked on the Tin Cup gold mine in Arizona and a couple of other projects, one called Port Snetson, which was an iron ore gold vanadium project in Alaska. And then I moved into AIS Resources as the chief operating officer, and then in 2016 became the CEO and president. And we spent quite a bit of time on the Washatop lithium project. We drilled it, as well as Positos and a joint venture with MGX at Salinas Grandes. And then we explored some manganese mines in Peru and got them up and running. And then we moved into gold when COVID hit, because clearly we couldn't move in and out freely of Argentina and Peru. So we put the foot on the accelerator, and I acquired four projects for the company, three of which are drill ready, and one is a great nearly 600 square kilometres, which is a lot of land, exploration project. That's basically been my career, heavily focused on gold and lithium brine production.
Okay. Well, it certainly sounds like a very diverse and long history there in the mining and exploration space, which is exciting. And I'll ask you some questions about how you feel the sector is and where it's going later on. But before we get into that, let's talk now about the company, about AIS Resources. Can you give an overview of the company, what you're into, and where you're focusing?
Yes, certainly, Mark. We've got three projects of one which is I call our premier project, which is the Elgogren, which is in New South Wales, and the other three, Tooline, and as the other two, Tooline and Kingston, are based in Victoria. And it's a delight to be able to drive for 2 hours and arrive at the project rather than travelling overseas and jumping in four-wheel drives and going miles and miles and miles. So Elgogren has been explored for the last 20 years by Dennis Walsh, who now is our senior or our chief geologist, and he was a senior exploration geologist with Kirkland Lake, their code's KL, and he was looking after a team of four geologists doing exploration in the same area that we're operating in at the moment. And Dennis has basically taken the reins from me and my other consultants, and he's driving that project at the moment. Tooline Fosterville is about 10 kilometres away from the Fosterville mine, which is at the moment one of the richest gold mines in the world. Their production's in the 200,000 ounces league, and their grades are very high. And perhaps we can touch on that in more detail a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Kingston is interesting in that BHP and Western Mining Corporation, the big majors, explored it. And basically, I think, as they usually do, because it didn't have a million ounces of gold, they walked away from it. So the juniors came in and started exploring. Some names that you would be familiar with. Stall Mining is not far away, which is now Northern Stall Exploration. And there's quite a few other big names. Navar has clearly been there. We have all their information and range resources. So there's a prospector's license, which is unusual in the middle of our 167 square kilometre exploration license. And they're just about to start mining for gold.
Mm-hmm.
And because their border is about 100 metres from our exploration license border, any gold that they take out of our exploration license area, we get 15%. So it's kind of a nice little kicker to have gold production, and we haven't put a cent into it in the sense of exploration costs. Caston is also interesting in that it has a huge area. There's gold there, there's gemstones, there's coal, there's nickel, there's copper. But they're all shows, and it's typical of all the big boys who are in there. They've all explored. But left it for various reasons. And so what we've been doing is looking at it from a desktop point of view, looking at magnetic studies and gravity studies, which the Victorian Mines Department's put together. And from that, we'll basically decide where we'll explore. We've already done Robinson's Creek, found some pretty interesting Gossan rocks there, so we'll be continuing on with that basic grassroots exploration. So in summary, we've got Elgogren, which is our most advanced project. We've got Tooline, where we finished the first phase of the gradient array work using deep ground penetrating radar, and following on from that, we'll do a very tight gravity survey to pick up the anomalies which are present in the broader Victorian Geology Department information. We also still have our eye on Argentina, and we still have our eye on the lithium market, which has started to resurrect itself from the lows. And that's keen. That's an area where we have a lot of internal expertise with Dr. Sorrentino and various others that assisted with our 2017, 2018 program in Argentina.
Okay. Well, you mentioned there the Fosterville mine, which is, of course, the big sort of headline name in the area of Victoria. And that state, the Victoria state in Australia, has been attracting a lot of attention recently, and almost like a modern day gold rush going on down there. So I wonder if I can ask you perhaps a double question. Could you provide an overview of the Fosterville mine? I believe
yes, sure.
Because you hold licenses near the Fosterville mine, but also just coming off the back of your experience in the sector, where do you feel the sector is now and going in regards to gold and precious metals? You mentioned that you moved into gold because of COVID, and I just wonder if I can get your opinion on where you think it's heading.
It's an interesting question. Let's just talk about Fosterville first. So it's a reef-based system, and what you do, you get these shear veins, you get small faulting, you get very significant folding, you get faults going through folds, and the hanging walls typically is where the gold's deposited, which is the case in Fosterville. The Fosterville fault runs basically through the middle of their project, which is about 8 kilometres long. It's a massive deposit, and there's these little tension veins which come off perpendicular to the main vaulting system, which is where most of the mineralisation occurs of gold. Obviously, lots of quartz around, and a lot of these reef quartz systems are very, very complex. Has two benefits. One, they're very, very, very complex to explore, and B, they have lots of gold in them. So if you have a look at the old timers, when they saw the surface expression of gold, they were able to mine very significant amounts. I think Bendigo and Ballarat are leading the world in terms of ounces of gold removed. At the moment, Fosterville, I was reading the other day, still have 2.2 million ounces of measured reserve. And that their head grade at the moment is a staggering 31.5 grams per tonne. So there's not too many mines around the world that have a head grade that high. And clearly they've got Block 3, which is right beside Fosterville. And Block 3 is between us and Fosterville. The significance of Block 3 is that, A, it's a big block, and B, the tender is going to be completed fairly shortly. And there's been some huge numbers put out for acquisition of that from the government, and also the minimum exploration expenditure, some even quite eye-watering. So because we're right against that, clearly there'll be a lot of information passed into the Victorian government, and it'll be quite exciting to see what happens with the winner of that tender. And, of course, above it is Block 4 and Block 5. Over to the western side of where we are is Costerfield, which has been a stibnite-based mine rather than an arsenic anomaly-type mine. And it also is very, very significant, more than $500 million of gold's been extracted over the years. So that's also a very large mine. So around us we have the Mount William Fault and the Whitelaw Fault, and we're squeezed in between the two. And then there's, because it's got about 20 metres of land cover, there's not much outcrop, but it's quite exciting looking at the structures that we're seeing with the deep ground penetrating radar. But once again, they're surface expressions that we need to explore and do other types of geophysics to make sure we have proper drill targets. That's a quick summary. The types of rocks are a white Ordovician rock, and it's called a turbidite, which is not very well known elsewhere in the world. So when you read a turbidite, you're reading about a sort of a muddy shale sandstone transition, which is a good signal that you're getting close to possible mineralization, because these tension faults go through the sandstones and the fluids flow with gold, obviously, fairly quickly.
Okay, good. Now, I had a look at your website and your presentation, and it seems that the projects are all drill ready for 2021. So you must be expecting quite a lot of news flow going forward. Is that right?
Yes, we are. In fact, Yalgogren has had a lot of work done on it, and at this stage, we've just finished the dipole geophysics, and I believe there'll be an announcement out very shortly on that, and then a follow-up announcement. But what it means to the team is that we can start drilling at Yalgogren, and we've got some very, very exciting data. Normally you get 5 to 7 millivolts per volt as chargeability, and we got one line with about 5 or 6 12s. So there's either a big barbed wire fence hidden under there, or there's a lot of sulfides, and we think it's probably the latter. So we're basically positioned our 8 drill holes at the moment, each one roughly 100 to 150 metres. And the geology team, Dennis Walsh and his crew, are mobilising next week. So they'll be up at Yolgogren and Worcester Wyalong probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the drill team will probably start drilling the first week of March. So it's pretty exciting times for us. Clearly, if we get big gold intercepts, that will make a difference to where we sit at the moment. And on the evidence on the last press release we put out, we showed the intercepts of 32 grams per tonne, 21 grams per tonne, and 9 metres at 2.1. It looks like this mineralised envelope would be ideal for a heap leach project. And as we mentioned in the press release, we've been speaking to the environmental people in Forbes and Parks to get all the documentation ready to start mining should we be blessed with some fairly big intercepts along the mineralised envelope.
Okay. Well, thank you very much there. That's Phil Thomas of AAS Resources. Thank you very much for your time, Phil.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching @stockboxmedia.